Chapter 25. Bruce's stomach grumbled with hunger as he stood with Ruffy and Hendry beside the cooking fire. In the early morning light, he could just make out the dark shape of the bridge at the end of the clearing. That drum was still beating in the jungle, but they hardly noticed it now. It was taken for granted, like the mosquitoes. "The batteries are finished," grunted Ruffy. The feeble yellow beam of the searchlight reached out tiredly towards the bridge. "Only just lasted the night," agreed Bruce. "Christ, I'm hungry," complained Hendry. "What could I do to a couple of fried eggs and a porterhouse steak?" At the mention of food, Bruce's mouth flooded with saliva. He shut his mind against the picture that Wally's words had evoked in his imagination. "We won't be able to finish the bridge and get the trucks across today," he said, and Ruffy agreed. "There's a full day's work left on her, boss." "This is what we'll do, then," Bruce went on. "I'll take the work party out to the bridge. Hendry, you'll stay here in the lager and cover us the same as yesterday. And Ruffy, you take one of the trucks and a dozen of your boys. Go back 10 miles or so to where the forest is open, and they won't be able to creep up on you. Then cut us a mountain of firewood, thick logs that'll burn all night. We'll set a ring of watchfires round the camp tonight." "That makes sense," Ruffy nodded. "But what about the bridge?" "We'll have to put a guard on it," said Bruce, and the expressions on their faces changed as they thought about this. "More pork chops for the boys in the bushes," growled Hendry. "You won't catch me sitting on the bridge all night." "No one's asking you to," snapped Bruce. "All right, Ruffy. Go and fetch the wood and plenty of it." Bruce completed the repairs to the bridge in the late afternoon. The most anxious period was in the middle of the day, when he and 4 men had to leave the shelter and clamber down onto the supports a few feet above the surface of the river to set the king posts in place. Here they were exposed at random range to arrows from the undergrowth along the banks. But no arrows came, and they finished the job and climbed back to safety again with something of a sense of anticlimax. They nailed the cross ties over the trusses and then roped everything into a compact mass. Bruce stood back and surveyed the fruit of 2 full days' labour. "Functional," he decided, speaking aloud. "But we certainly aren't going to win any prizes for aesthetic beauty or engineering design." He picked up his jacket and thrust his arms into the sleeves. His sweaty upper body was cold now that the sun was almost down. "Home, gentlemen," he said, and his gendarmes scattered to their positions inside the shelter. The metal shelter circled the lager, squatting every 20 or 30 paces like an old woman preparing to relieve herself. When it lifted and moved on, it left a log fire behind it. The ring of fires was completed by dark, and the shelter returned to the lager. "Are you ready, Ruffy?" From inside the shelter, Bruce called across to where Ruffy waited.
"All set, boss."
Followed by 6 heavily armed gendarmes, Ruffy crossed quickly to join Bruce, and they set off to begin their all-night vigil on the bridge. Before midnight it was cold in the corrugated iron shelter, for the wind blew down the river, and they were completely exposed to it, and there was no cloud cover to hold the day's warmth against the earth. The men in the shelter huddled under their gas capes and waited. Bruce and Ruffy leaned together against the corrugated iron wall, their shoulders almost touching, and there was sufficient light from the stars to light the interior of the shelter and allow them to make out the guardrails of the bridge through the open ends.
"Moon'll be up in an hour," murmured Ruffy.
"Only a quarter of it, but it will give us a little more light," Bruce concurred, and peered down into the black hole between his feet where he had prized up one of the newly laid planks.
"How about taking a shine with a torch?" suggested Ruffy.
"No." Bruce shook his head and passed the flashlight into his other hand.
"Not until I hear them."
"You might not hear them.
If they swim downstream and climb up the piles, which is what I expect, then we'll hear them all right.
They'll be dripping water all over the place," said Bruce.
"Kanaki and his boys didn't hear them," Ruffy pointed out.
"Kanaki and his boys weren't listening for it," said Bruce.
They were silent then for a while. One of the gendarmes started to snore softly, and Ruffy shot out a huge booted foot that landed in the small of his back. The man cried out and scrambled to his knees, looking wildly about him.
"You have nice dreams?" Ruffy asked pleasantly.
"I wasn't sleeping," the man protested. "I was thinking."
"Well, don't think so loudly," Ruffy advised him. "Sounds though you sawing through the bridge with a cross cut."
Another half hour dragged itself by like a cripple.
"Fires are burning well," commented Ruffy,
and Bruce turned his head and glanced through the loophole in the corrugated iron behind him at the little garden of orange flame flowers in the darkness.
"Yes,
they should last till morning."
Silence again, with only the singing of the mosquitoes and the rustle of the river as it flowed by the piles of the bridge.
"Shemaine has my pistol," Bruce remembered, with a small trip in his pulse. "I should have taken it back from her."
He unclipped the bayonet from the muzzle of his rifle, tested the edge of the blade with his thumb, and slid it into the scabbard on his web belt.
"Could easily lose the rifle if we start mixing it in the dark," he decided.
"Christ, I'm hungry," grunted Ruffy beside him.
"You're too fat," said Bruce. "The diet will do you good."
And they waited.
Bruce stared down into the hole in the floorboards. His eyes began weaving fantasies out of the darkness. He could see vague shapes that moved, like things seen below the surface of the sea. His stomach tightened, and he fought the impulse to shine his flashlight into the hole. He closed his eyes to rest them. "I'll count slowly to 10, he decided, "and then look again." Ruffy's hand closed on his upper arm. The pressure of his fingers transmitted alarm like a current of electricity. Bruce's eyelids flew open.
"Listen," breathed Ruffy.
Bruce heard it. The stealthy drip of water on water below them. Then something bumped the bridge, but so softly that he felt rather than heard the jar.
"Yes,"
Bruce whispered back. He reached out and tapped the shoulder of the gendarme beside him, and the man's body stiffened at his touch. With his breath scratching his dry throat, Bruce waited until he was sure the warning had been passed to all his men. Then he shifted the weight of his rifle from across his knees and aimed down into the hole. He drew in a deep breath and switched on the flashlight. The beam shot down, and he looked along it over his rifle barrel. The square aperture in the floorboards formed a frame for the picture that flashed into his eyes. Black bodies, naked, glossy with wetness, weird patterns of tattoo marks, a face staring up at him, broad sloped forehead above startlingly white eyes and flat nose, the long gleaming blade of a panga, clusters of humanity clinging to the wooden piles like ticks on the legs of a beast. Legs and arms and shiny trunks merged into a single organism, horrible as some slimy sea creature. Bruce fired into it. His rifle shuddered against his shoulder, and the long orange spurts from its muzzle gave the picture a new flickering horror. The mass of bodies heaved and struggled like a pack of rats trapped in a dry well. They dropped, splashing into the river, swarmed up the timber piles, twisting and writhing as the bullets hit them, screaming, babbling over the sound of the rifle. Bruce's weapon clicked empty, and he groped for a new magazine. Ruffy and his gendarmes were hanging over the guardrails of the bridge, firing downwards, sweeping the piles below them with long bursts, the flashes lighting their faces and outlining their bodies against the sky.
"They're still coming," roared Ruffy. "Don't let them get over the side."
Out of the hole at Bruce's feet thrust the head and naked upper body of a man. There was a panga in his hand. He slashed at Bruce's legs, his eyes glazed in the beam of the flashlight. Bruce jumped back, and the knife missed his knees by inches. The man wormed his way out of the hole towards Bruce. He was screaming shrilly, a high, meaningless sound of fury. Bruce lunged with the barrel of his empty rifle at the contorted black face. All his weight was behind that thrust, and the muzzle went into the Baluba's eye. The foresight and 4 inches of the barrel disappeared into his head, stopping only when it hit bone.
Colourless fluid from the burst eyeball gushed from round the protruding steel. Tugging and twisting, Bruce tried to free the rifle, but the foresight had buried itself like the barb of a fishhook. The Baluba had dropped his panga and was clinging to the rifle barrel with both hands. He was wailing and rolling on his back upon the floorboards, his head jerking every time Bruce tried to pull the muzzle out of his head. Beyond him, the head and shoulders of another Baluba appeared through the aperture. Bruce dropped his rifle and gathered up the fallen panga. He jumped over the writhing body of the first Baluba and lifted the heavy knife above his head with both hands. The man was jammed in the hole, powerless to protect himself. He looked up at Bruce and his mouth fell open. Two-handed, as though he were chopping wood, Bruce swung his whole body into the stroke. The shock jarred his shoulders, and he felt blood splatter his legs. The untempered blade snapped off at the hilt and stayed embedded in the Baluba's skull. Panting heavily, Bruce straightened up and looked wildly about him. Baluba was swarming over the guardrail on one side of the bridge. The starlight glinted on the wet skins. One of his gendarmes was lying in a dark huddle, his head twisted back and his rifle still in his hands. Ruffy and the other gendarmes were still firing down over the far side. "Ruffy," shouted Bruce. "Behind you, they're coming over." And he dropped the handle of the panga and ran towards the body of the gendarme. He needed that rifle. Before he could reach it, the naked body of a Baluba rushed at him. Bruce ducked under the sweep of the panga and grappled with him. They fell locked together, the man's body slippery and sinuous against him, and the smell of him fetid as rancid butter. Bruce found the pressure point below the elbow of his knife arm and dug in with his thumb. The Baluba yelled and his panga clattered on the floorboards. Bruce wrapped his arm round the man's neck, while with his free hand he reached for his bayonet. The Baluba was clawing for Bruce's eyes with his fingers. His nails scored the side of Bruce's nose, but Bruce had his bayonet out now. He placed the point against the man's chest and pressed it in. He felt the steel scrape against the bone of a rib, and the man redoubled his struggles at the sting of it. Bruce twisted the blade, working it in with his wrist, forcing the man's head backwards with his other arm. The point of the bayonet scraped over the bone and found the gap between. Like taking a virgin, suddenly the resistance to its entrance was gone, and it slid home full length. The Baluba's body jerked mechanically, and the bayonet twitched in Bruce's fist. Bruce didn't even wait for the man to die. He pulled the blade out against the sucking reluctance of tissue that clung to it and scrambled to his feet in time to see Ruffy pick another Baluba from his feet and hurl him bodily over the guardrail. Bruce snatched the rifle from the gendarme's dead hands and stepped to the guardrail. They were coming over the side, those below shouting and pushing at the ones above. Like shooting a row of sparrows from a fence with a shotgun, thought Bruce grimly, and with one long burst he cleared the rail. Then he leaned out and sprayed the piles below the bridge. The rifle was empty. He reloaded with a magazine from his pocket, but it was all over. They were dropping back into the river. The piles below the bridge were clear of men. Their heads bobbed away downstream. Bruce lowered his rifle and looked about him. Three of his gendarmes were killing the man that Bruce had wounded, standing over him and grunting as they thrust down with their bayonets. The man was still wailing. Bruce looked away. One horn of the crescent moon showed above the trees. It had a gauzy halo about it. Bruce lit a cigarette, and behind him those gruesome noises ceased. "Are you okay, boss?" "Yes, I'm fine. How about you, Ruffy?" "I got me a terrible thirst now. Hope nobody trod on my pack." About 4 minutes from the first shot to the last, Bruce guessed. That's the way of war. 7 hours of waiting and boredom, then 4 minutes of frantic endeavour. Not only a war, either, he thought. The whole of life is like that. Then he felt the trembling in his thighs, and the first spasm of nausea as the reaction started. "What's happening?" A shout floated across from the lager. Bruce recognized Hendry's voice. "Is everything all right?" "We've beaten them off," Bruce shouted back. "Everything under control. You can go to sleep again."
"And now I've got to sit down quickly," he told himself. Except for the tattoos upon his cheeks and forehead, the dead Baluba's features were little different from those of the Bambala and Bakuba men who made up the bulk of Bruce's command. Bruce played the flashlight over the corpse. The arms and legs were thin but stringy with muscle, and the belly bulged out from years of malnutrition. It was an ugly body, gnarled and crabbed. With distaste, Bruce moved the light back to the features. The bone of the skull formed harsh angular planes beneath the skin. The nose was flattened, and the thick lips had about them a repellent brutality. They were drawn back slightly to reveal the teeth, which had been filed to sharp points like those of a shark.
"This is the last one, boss. I'll toss him overboard," Ruffy spoke in the darkness beside Bruce.
"Good."
Ruffy heaved and grunted. The corpse splashed below them and Ruffy wiped his hands on the guardrail, then came to sit beside Bruce.
"Goddamn apes."
Ruffy's voice was full of the bitter tribal antagonism of Africa.
"When we get shot of these UN people, there'll be a bit of sorting out to do. They've got a few things to learn, these bloody Baluba."
And so it goes, thought Bruce. Jew and Gentile, Catholic and Protestant, black and white, Bambala and Baluba. He checked the time. Another 2 hours to dawn. His nervous reaction from physical violence had abated now. The hand that held the cigarette no longer trembled.
"They won't come again," said Ruffy. "You can get some sleep now if you want. I'll keep an eye open, boss."
"No, thanks. I'll wait with you." His nerves had not settled down enough for sleep.
"How's it for a beer?"
"Thanks." Bruce sipped the beer and stared out at the watchfires round the lager. They had burned down to puddles of red ash, but Bruce knew that Ruffy was right. The Baluba would not attack again that night.
"So, how do you like freedom?"
"How's that, boss?" The question puzzled Ruffy, and he turned to Bruce questioningly.
"How do you like it now the Belgians have gone?"
"It's pretty good, I reckon."
"And if Tshombe has to give in to the central government?"
"Those mad Arabs," snarled Ruffy.
"All they want is our copper. They're going to have to get up early in the morning to take it. We're in the saddle here."
The great jousting tournament of the African continent. "I'm in the saddle. Try to unhorse me." As in all matters of survival, it was not a question of ethics and political doctrine, except to the spectators in Whitehall, Moscow, Washington, and Peking. There were big days coming, thought Bruce. My own country, when she blows, is going to make Algiers look like an old lady's sewing circle.